We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Lots of bad news during the day, but you know what? The Twins win and there was some sunshine. So that's the good news. I'm Jordana Green. Thanks for hanging out with me on this beautiful Monday. David at the helm, Paul's in Argentina, and the Twins win. We started off the show, in fact, 2 minutes early, David, because there was no post-game, post-spring training games. And David put it so beautifully. He said he was, and David, correct me if I'm wrong, looking for reasons to do chores in the garage this weekend so he could turn on the radio and listen to the Twins game.
I'm not allowed to listen to sports inside the house. Oh. My wife has made that clear. Okay. So if I'm mowing the grass or changing the oil or, you know, doing something productive towards the family, then I can also listen to the game, and it's a win-win for everybody. And I was looking for ways to do that yesterday, and then I hopped in my car today on the way here and heard the Twins on the radio. It's like sinking back into a recliner that you haven't been able to sit in for a few months.
It's just great
to have the Twins back on these airwaves.
I love that because David, like, perfectly articulated the way so many people feel when they turn on WCCO and they hear baseball coming through the speakers. Of course, WCCO and the Twins are a perfect fit, but here in baseball means that spring is coming and it's going to get warm here and we're going to have game after game. And there was a wonderful win today. Dave Lee was down there all week, as you heard him last week. He is back in-house. And our own Mike Max is down there for a few days at spring training. We spoke with him early in the program, right after the spring training game win, and he gave us an update from Florida.
So they won, as you know. Nobody got hurt.
Thank God. I just
talked to Rocco Baldelli. Everybody was, they're happy with everything that happened today. The big thing for Twins fans was they're watching Kenta Maeda make his debut. He's the one they traded for from the Los Angeles Dodgers. He came in and pitched and pitched. He gave a home run to the second hitter, and then he got a little trouble, and then he pitched okay. So they were pretty happy with the way he pitched. So from a baseball standpoint, they were happy that he got some work in, and he had good enough stuff early in the year, all that stuff. It's always funny though, Jordan, because when you have a player, I don't know what their budgets are for TV stations in Japan, but they follow these players in the big leagues like you wouldn't believe. All over. I mean, all throughout the season, they have correspondents here. I mean, I'm talking about a half a dozen. Tommy Watkins walking by me, the mayor of Fort Myers, they call him, the first base coach of the Twins. But they follow these players from spring training on, and I have no idea what the interest level must be back there in Japan, but there's a bunch of them here today just following him.
That's so cool. So what was it like this morning? Were you, in the locker room with them?
Gorgeous. It really was. They got. They say it's going to be bad on Wednesday. So I don't know if the game is scheduled to be on CCO Radio or not on Wednesday, but they say they're getting rain and cold coming in starting on Wednesday. But today was perfect. It was in the 70s. It was, everybody's so happy down here because they're not Minnesota and it's February. And, of course, it really is mainly Minnesotans here. And so you're talking to people constantly here. We went and watched out in left field where you've got a berm out there. You can sit on the grass and watch the game. And that was a lot of fun with the fans out there just to sit and partake with them. And, everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's optimistic about this team because of what they did last year. Everybody's got an opinion or two about it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a little conversation today about, Zach Parise looked like he was on the trade block pretty hot and heavy there for a while for the Minnesota Wilds. That became part of conversation because social media moves so quick in these days. But it looks like, as of right now, at least that deal's not going to happen. Stay tuned. But that was part of the conversations that you have with fans, people coming up and asking about that. And they're playing the Boston Red Sox, and the Red Sox train down here as well. So they always send a healthy delegation of fans because between JetBlue Stadium and here, it's about the same distance for folks that are fans. So Red Sox are always heavily attended games.
Oh, okay, so that was my – and do you have a lot of Minnesota fans down there?
Oh, yeah, and so many people that now they started earlier. Now, baseball starts earlier. They start playing spring training games in February instead of March. That changed a couple years ago. So you don't have the apex of it is in March when families can come down here on spring break. That's when they pack it. That's when it's, you know, traffic gets bad and everything else. Now, traffic wasn't great today, but it wasn't bad. February is a little bit early. So what you see here now is a few families and a lot of, you know, seven guys down here playing golf and, you know, going to watch the Twins. And a couple of retired couples that come down every year and they decide to come in February instead of March. You get a lot of that in terms of demographics right now.
He's having a great time. He is having a great time at spring training. You know, this weekend I'm heading down to Florida for my grandmother's 100th birthday. She's turned 100. And my in-laws are taking my son to spring training. We're not going to be near Fort Myers, so he's going to Mets spring training in Jupiter. But spring training is just a blast, as you can hear in Mike's voice. And we'll be taking updates from Mike throughout the week. Other top story of the day, Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein found guilty of rape in the third degree, also a count of criminal sexual act in the first degree, but he was acquitted of the two most serious criminal charges. Here to make some sense of this is criminal defense attorney Mike Bryant. Mike, we're from Bradshaw and Bryant, of course. Mike, we're so happy to have you on the program.
Yeah, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm good. Explain this to us, because, okay, you're guilty of some, but not others. But wait a minute, if you're guilty of some, how are you not guilty of others? Just shake that out for us.
Well, he's guilty. He was found guilty of the actual charges, the people that was charged out for. The judge allowed for other survivors to testify, and the question was whether or not he's a predatory sexual assault in the first degree, and that would have had the life imprisonment as part of it. The court or the jury found that he was not guilty of that, which doesn't mean he's innocent of it. It just means that there wasn't enough evidence, and it was a pretty convoluted jury instruction for them to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And they apparently got hung up on a number of different issues, and, you know, the jury isn't told everything. So, you know, there could be discussions about, well, if these were charges, why weren't these cases charged out? There could be all sorts of other discussions the jury's having that led to them coming to the conclusion they did. And he was charged, he was convicted of some very serious crimes.
Right.
And so, you know, the idea that anybody's out there saying, you know, this wasn't a victory for survivors is ridiculous, because these people came forward, they told their stories. When they were told their stories, the juries believed them, and he's convicted of it.
I agree with you. I absolutely think it's a victory for survivors. He now faces a sentence on these charges, at least, of 5 to 25 years on the top count.
Correct.
I know, yep. Asking you to predict this, you know, it's like a magic eight ball, but what do you think?
Well, they'll look at a number of factors. They're going to look at you know, what it was, what he was charged with. They're going to look at how he goes into to talk to the probation officer. If he's still fighting it and says, I didn't do it and this is all made up, that's one thing the judge looks at. If he goes in and said, I did these things, I now feel bad and I'm contrite about it, they do some different things.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly to do, I don't know this judge's history, not having practiced in New York on this, you know, but I think he's probably going to get someplace in the middle is my guess. Also, what he does is on the appeal is going to play a role, because I think that'll play a role on him going to California and facing the charges out there.
Right. And let's talk briefly about that. What are those charges out there? And then if you're convicted on both, you can't spend time in two prisons.
Correct. But they could, with these charges and with the additional survivors out in California, they may be able to put together enough for the predatory sexual assault and rape the first degree, which would be the lifetime sentence.
Right.
So I'm positive they had people there. I'm sure they got all the transcripts, and I'm sure they're ready to go after him as much as they can in California and try to get even more time put on him.
He didn't testify. Would you have put him on the stand?
Well, I mean, you have a constitutional right not to testify, so the jury isn't supposed to take that in consideration. But, you know, it's really hard for jurors when they sit there and they think, geez, you know, if I didn't do these things, I would have testified. That's something that comes in their mind. You know, that's a decision a lawyer makes, because sometimes you talk to the client, you find out, boy, this person can't testify because this is going to happen horribly if they testify. So there's a lot of things that come into play. He has a constitutional right not to testify. And, you know, I think that they decided to follow that. But, you know, Cosby did the same thing, and he's sitting in prison also.
He is. How do you think this case, and I at the top of the show called it a landmark case,
yep,
in Me Too. I mean, I think Cosby's was one too. How will this impact other cases in the Me Too movement?
Well, I hope it gives voice to survivors. I mean, you know, one of the big questions and one of the things people have talked about is, why didn't these women come sooner, or why didn't they, you know, go get somebody to beat him up? You know, he was powerful, and they decided, you know, that they did certain things that at that time they thought they needed to do to advance their career, but it was wrong. And it was horrible what he was doing. And the ones that came forward, there's not a way to honor them. They're unbelievable to come forward and to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. And that's what they did. And I hope it helps other people to see that this works.
Mike Bryant, I so appreciate you helping make sense of this. And we'll be watching the case unfold in L.A. and we'll be calling you back.
Great. Nice talking to you.
Thanks, Take Mike. Care. You got it. Mike's with Bradshaw and Bryant. When we return, we spoke with Sheriff Hutchinson about what's going on in the sheriff's office. He talked with us about a plan to reduce gun violence and also how he and his officers treat victims of sexual violence. That's next. Jordana here. So Paul's not at the beach. In fact, he was wearing parkas in his pictures. When he's going to South America, I thought, you know, oh, it'll be lovely there. But no, not where he is.
Yeah, he's in Patagonia, yes, which is like closer to Antarctica than a lot of places in South America.
So Paul is on, well, he's on vacation. He's there for a destination wedding, David. He'll be back.
That's not a destination wedding, Jordana.
It's a destination for Paul. he'll be back next week. So you're hanging with me. So thank you. I appreciate that. David's at the helm. Earlier today, we started a new segment. We have invited Sheriff Dave Hutchinson, the Hennepin County Sheriff, to join us once a month to talk about what's going on in the sheriff's office, how he wanted to really initiate a lot of changes when he got elected and he came to power. And some of those changes were very interesting to us. We know that law enforcement, as you learned from Susie Jones' stories today about these listening meetings, law enforcement needs to engage in more with community. So Hutch is going to engage with us on a monthly basis to talk about what's happening in the sheriff's office, how they are engaging in the greater community, what needs to be done. It's also going to be a chance for you to ask questions, because my email is always open to you. Don't call me, by the way. I barely listen to the voicemail. My email is jordana.green@entercom.com. Send me lots of emails. I'd love you to ask Sheriff Hutch a question and have him answer it on the air. So today we talked about best practices. We talked about the busy weekend that the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office had. They had a plane crash. They had two body recoveries, the Safer Hennepin Initiative, and then something called NIBIN. NIBIN is a nationwide program that matches ballistics. So if there's a crime of gun violence in the Twin Cities, they can trace where that gun may have been throughout the country. He says it is newly in place. It used to be in place. Somehow something got changed where they didn't have access to it. But he now put it back in place because he really feels that gun violence is something that needs to be stopped, and he is doing whatever he can to make it happen.
Absolutely. And you can match bullets to shell casings and bullets to guns. So this is what we're going to do to hopefully minimize gun violence and violent crime. Is now it's all tip of our fingers, basically. We have one of the best crime labs in the nation. It's ran by a great network. And now if there's a shooting and a gun in Chicago or Detroit or wherever, Milwaukee, and they come here and we recover that gun, we can now easily, within minutes, track in place where these guns have had issues or evolved in homicides, et cetera. So it's new technology that we had at one point. They removed it. And we advocated for them to bring it back because it does help solve gun violence.
walk that back a little bit, because I was just going to ask, so is this new and another tool? So wait, you're saying we had it. Yep. Someone took it away. Who took it away?
Well, they didn't necessarily take it away. There was a program under the old administration, and I'm not sure exactly what happened, but there was something that they took it back, and the BCA had the only machine. And we advocated to have the machine back because the BCA is too overwhelmed. So our goal is to get gun violence and all this technology here in Hennepin County. Because, again, we're the biggest and, in my opinion, of course, the best sheriff's office in the nation. And we need to have this technology so we can compete. But also this technology is going to make sure that people pulling the trigger on guns and killing people are going to be held accountable. And we're not going to tolerate it. And this machine is going to help us connect the bad people to the guns, to the stolen guns, to the bullets and shell casings.
Excellent. You talked a minute about best practices before and sharing best practices. That's particularly important to me. I was just talking about the Harvey Weinstein case. And here in Minnesota, the Star Tribune did a big series called Denied Justice. It's about when victims of rape or sexual violence are unheard. Their rape kit isn't tested, or the first responder is not necessarily sensitive to what's happening, or they're shaming or they're blaming. Do you have a series of best are officers in your office sometimes the first responders on cases of sexual violence? And then do you have updated best practices for dealing with victims of sexual assault?
Absolutely. You know, we're a 21st century agency and everything, but that's very near and dear to my heart because, you know, all this stuff has happened in the last few years. And then when I was on the campaign trail, a lot of people, men and women, brought that to my attention of, you know, some of these kits aren't being tested because of backlogs. So we're doing the best we can, and we have the county's helpful. We're doing, again, we're going to make sure our practices are, in fact, the best in the nation. But some of our deputies respond. You know, we have a few contract cities. We wouldn't respond in Minneapolis or agencies what they have their own, but we do.
So you're saying cities that don't have their own police force?
Exactly.
Okay, you would be first responders on the scene.
Absolutely.
Okay, continue, I'm sorry.
And then even in police departments where they have, you know, cities with their own police departments, you know, we're going to help. We have the best investigative agency around. We have, you know, intel-based investigations. So a lot of these agencies, if it was a complex case, is going to come to us. And we're happy to take these cases because we have more resources than, let's say, a smaller suburban agency. Mm-hmm. But as far as technology, again, is going to make sure that the kits are tested. They're managed better so we're not losing, rape kits, whatever you call them. Because it's important because those people, the victims should have a voice, and the suspects in those horrendous crimes need to go to jail. I mean, if you sexually assault a woman or anybody, you need to be arrested and charged. It's a serious crime. It's a crime that we're not going to tolerate in Minneapolis and Hennepin County as well, just like gun violence. So those are very, very deep and dark kind of crimes, and that's our objective, is to go after violent crimes, and we're going to do our best.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because often sex crimes are treated the way that the people at the top view them. And when you have somebody who is the top dog, the sheriff, the person running it, if they let everybody else know that prosecuting these violent crimes is important, is necessary, I think that really trickles down to the rest of the department. So thank you for that.
And absolutely. I think we're not, you know, again, we're talking about, I bring it up, downtown crime this year. You know, we're going to be out early this spring. We're going to go. I have different unions and different companies that we're going to go do some pathway programs to get these men and women jobs. We want to make sure they have opportunities to, you know, get off the street and quit selling dope and, you know, quit harassing people downtown. But also this year you're going to see a lot of our sheriff's deputies out with Minneapolis and the transit police, and we're going to reduce violent crime.
I like to hear that. We're going to reduce violent crime. I appreciate that. Sheriff Hutch, if you've got a question for him that you want us to ask him at his next visit next month, jordana.green@entercom.com. Go nuts. Let me know what you think. When we get back, we're going to check in with the newsroom. We're having the newsroom come in at 3:30 and 5:30, tell us the top story of the day, make sense of it for us, shake it out for us. So Laura Oakes will be joining us. And then we're going to talk about what's happening in Ohio. Ohio will pay employees $2,000 per employee to get them upskilled, to get them trained so they can advance either at their current job or in a new one.
pretty cool. I love everything about that. We're going to talk about that next. It's 5:35. Jordana Green here. Thank you for spending some time with us today. Adam Carter is joining us in the studio because Adam has been diligently working on creating your newscast, which you will hear at 6 o'clock. There'll be a long form that Susie Jones chatted with us at 3:35 about these listening sessions. This task force talked about community engagement and how to create better relationships between police and community. But what are we focusing on today at 5:30, Adam?
Well, big event today in Los Angeles at the Staples Center, a very public memorial service, celebration of Kobe Bryant and also his 13-year-old daughter, Gigi. Wednesday will be 1 month since they were both killed in that helicopter crash in California, and a very stirring memorial, very public today. It was streamed live on a number of services, aired live on ESPN, and just beautiful music. The place was full. I mean, the Staples Center was packed with fans who had lined up to pay their respects to Kobe. It was emceed by Jimmy Kimmel, who was very emotional talking about his friend Kobe Bryant. They were very close friends. He was kind of the MC of the day, and then we had a nice number of nice eulogies, including from his wife, Vanessa Bryant. And you imagine just how hard the last month has been for her. She was just so, so poignant today in talking about her daughter and then her husband, Kobe, in a very long eulogy. Here's a little sample of how she is going to remember Gigi. Very, very emotional stuff.
Mommy, Natalia, Bianca, Capri, and Daddy, love you so much, Gigi. I will miss your sweet handmade cards, your sweet kisses, and your gorgeous smile. I miss you, all of you, every day. I love you.
She was so composed giving Matt a eulogy today. And just thinking how difficult that must be to do, not to mention you're doing it in front of about 20,000 people.
And just a month after. I don't know that I could get off the floor at this point.
Just incredible. Probably the highlight, though, from the eulogy standpoint today was Michael Jordan. Obviously, many consider Michael Jordan the greatest basketball player of all time. And he got up there and he delivered just an incredible eulogy about his relationship with Kobe and how the two of them went back and forth. And then he was a big brother to Kobe and how he would they'd text back and forth. And even, you know, it's very popular, the crying Jordan meme. If people are online, they know that crying face of Michael Jordan has become a very popular meme. Well, his face was just soaked with tears today. And it was the same thing when I was watching him, like, oh, that's just like the meme. And he even mentioned it. He said, you know, my wife's going to give me grief because here's going to be another crying Jordan meme for the next, you know, 5 to 6 years. But he was very good. And here's a little sample of what Michael Jordan had to say about Kobe.
When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died, or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing that I had a little brother that I tried to help in every way I could.
Great musical performance. Beyonce opened up the service with an incredible musical performance. Christina Aguilera, Alicia Keys also performed. Other eulogies given by Shaquille O'Neal. And also, I should mention, WNBA great Diana Taurasi also gave a eulogy. You don't think about it a lot. You think about the impact Kobe had on the NBA and men's basketball. But what he was doing with his daughter and how she was growing up to be an exceptional basketball player. They talked about his impact on the women's game. And that the loss of Gigi, you know, by all accounts, she was going to be a professional women's basketball player. And that would have been something else to see a Bryant, Kobe Bryant's daughter, in the WNBA. But they just talked about the impact he had, not only on the men's game of basketball, but women's basketball as well. And we know about his legal problems earlier in life. I mean, that's a part of the Kobe Bryant story. But it is a testament to how he changed his life and made an impact. Not only on his family, but the community around him and just the impact he had on all. It should be also mentioned today that Vanessa Bryant, his widow, also filed a lawsuit against the helicopter company for the crash and the questionable things that the pilot might have done flying into that foggy weather. But the memorial service was also mentioning all the other people that died on board, including the pilot, to too. So just a very, very emotional, but kind of a celebration of Kobe Bryant's life today.
I did. I did read about that lawsuit, and I thought, I cannot imagine what this woman is going through, mourning the loss of not only one, but two members of her immediate family, and then having to deal with these legal issues.
Yeah, serious questions about that, why they were flying in those conditions.
And, the whole thing is tragic. But thank you for shaking it out for us and letting us kind of absorb some of those sound bites.
I'd tell anybody who was at work today, maybe didn't catch it, catch some of those replays of some of the, especially Michael Jordan's eulogy was really, really powerful. And as I mentioned, Shaquille O'Neal had some funny moments too, but great stuff from the Staples Center today.
You know what's interesting about when a celebrity dies, Adam? People mourn in a real way. This is not somebody you've ever met.
Right.
You've just, you know, you don't have a connection to him other than watching him on TV or maybe going to a couple of games.
Right.
But this is a real, I mean, the connection is real.
Yeah.
You admired that person or you, whatever it was, they had an impact on your life. So I have often heard people say, well, I feel silly, you know, mourning or crying at somebody's death or their passing. But that's real grief.
Absolutely.
And this was a really nice way that fans everywhere could share and kind of get it out.
Get it out. Yeah,
get it out.
Lots of chants, Kobe during the memorial service today. And they played his, the one other thing too that was very poignant. I'd never seen it before, that little short story, the short film that he made that he won the Oscar for.
Yes.
They played that. And it was just so poignant, and especially in kind of a eulogy for himself. It was just very, very emotional.
This one hit the kids hard, too, because he was a young man, but because he was a superstar in that way. And recently, you know, we've heard about Pop Smoke, who was a rapper who died, and my kids listen to him. They listen to rap, and they are dealing with grief in certain ways. And I this is how I come to say what I say to you. I tell them, just because you never met them, you don't know them personally, doesn't mean you can't feel sad.
Oh, for sure.
It's okay to feel sad, and it's okay to cry, and it's okay to emote, because then you move through it. I mean, that's how you deal with grief. So it's really nice that they had a place where that was public, that everybody could watch and sort of grieve together.
Right, absolutely.
Thank you for bringing it to us, to Adam.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it. When we get back, we are going to talk about that state program in Ohio that will give employers $2,000 per employee if they upskill, if they train, if they pay for their employees to get furthering education that will help them maybe in this job, maybe in another job. I would be so on board with this. Fantastic. And this is the way the state is helping create continuing learners and the next evolution of the workforce. We'll talk about that next. So, David, if WCCO said to you, I'd love you to take a continuing education class, what don't you know? Excel, how to do spreadsheet work, or how to build a website, anything really that might have been out of your comfort zone, basket weaving, whatever it is. And CCO was willing to pay for you to take this class. Would you do it?
I think I would if that class was going to give me skills that were going to be useful in the furthering of my career.
Right. But, okay, even like at CCO or even somewhere else. Because I say Excel, like you don't use Excel spreadsheets right now, but you never know. Maybe you'd want to start a business later in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's something that I perceive to have value for a future career, sure. If it's something that they want me to know that I go, God, I'm never going to use that, then no, I'm not going to, you know, take a bunch of time to do something I'm not interested in isn't going to help me. But yeah, if there was a class that I thought was really going to be helpful for my career, absolutely, I would jump at that.
And that's what Ohio's doing. This is a very forward-thinking program to what's called upskilling the workforce in Ohio. All right? There is a $17.5 million plan. It's basically a grant for businesses to pay employees to upgrade their tech skills. It's called Tech Cred. The company will get reimbursed by the government, by the state of Ohio, and they can do this for up to 15 employees. It's $2,000 per employee, up to $30,000 per employer. So let's say, you know, your class, your whatever you're going to take costs $2,000, or maybe you could take a number of classes for $2,000. And they're industry-recognized tech-focused classes from Google Cloud, Oracle, Microsoft, things like that. The governor said there's lots of job training programs for people who are unemployed. But when you have sustained low unemployment like this in this country and in Ohio, you have an issue with the workforce. You need to find a way to upskill them. Because if you stay in the same job and you're not growing and learning, then you are only doing that job. And maybe you don't feel qualified or confident to go find a new one or even jump companies. Well, TechCred recognizes 397 certificates. A certificate is like, you know, when you pass a course. They're related to business, healthcare, cybersecurity, military, and smart transportation, construction. It's a bunch of stuff. Robotics, it's a bunch of stuff. So participants can apply to the program. So, David, you wouldn't get, like, stuck with a class. You would say, oh, I want to take a class in robotics, that kind of thing. And applicants are scored competitively based on several factors. The one factor is how much the employer expects to raise the worker's wages after completing the program. So I guess you have to get accepted. And mostly it's for people to advance in the current career that they have. They say, if we're going to invest these dollars, we want to upskill people who will earn more and in turn create more productivity for their employers. And then we all share in that, says the governor also. So you get to take a class or you get to learn new skills to advance in your current job. I know that this is something that used to happen, you know, back in the day, David, maybe when our parents came up, that they used to get training. I mean, you have apprenticeships now. You still have that in some of the trades where you keep learning new things and you get better. But often in desk jobs, you just don't see it. And, you know, especially tech. Like if you're, you know, if you are the receptionist and you eventually want to be, you know, a head of sales, you don't necessarily get those skills just sitting at the reception desk. You need to take continuing classes. So I think this, I love everything about this program. The fact that employees don't have to pay for it. So everybody who frowns on free college, that's kind of what this is. That's right. Getting some free college credits here or free technology skills, technology credits. That's really what it is. And it's only smart. It is so smart for the employers to be willing to get on board. Again, they're getting reimbursed by the state, but the state is going to attract really smart people and just continue to have really educated people in the workforce. I hope it's only $17.5 million. Maybe that's in the couch cushions from our budget surplus here in Minnesota, but I think it's absolutely fantastic. If I could take a class here, I would love to learn how to build my own website. I would love to learn some entrepreneurial skills. Even management skills. Not that I'm managing anybody, but we're managing each other here. You know, David, Paul, and I are a team. Paul is really high maintenance. I'm kidding.
Can we get a Paul Douglas course that just
how to manage
trains
Paul.
Us how to manage Paul?
No, but I would love even to be able to mentor. Mm-hmm. You know, we have young kids coming through here for the promotions department, and maybe that's supposed to be an innate skill, but, you know, I think that would be a good skill to have. They could be soft skills that are so important as well. So I love everything about this.
Yeah, and I think it's needed that it's sort of it's a reputable organization that's doing these trainings. It's outside of like the work environment and the work day because, you know, nobody wants like bring your brown bag for a conference in the fifth floor or whatever. Like, that, you know,
let's do math.
People get tired of that. But if you say, hey, we're going to allow you and pay for you to go to a establishment that's, you know, has good education and we're going to allow you to get better skills.
I think it's great. Absolutely fantastic. I love it. And the thing about learning something new, and I've done this with snowboarding, stretched me a little bit. it changes the brain, changes your consciousness. It takes you completely out of your comfort zone. So you get to then just have a different outlook on life. And it's literally like doing sit-ups for the brain. It's a completely new muscle that you're using. And when you know, we're not in school anymore. We're not taking all these different classes. We're not crammed with college classes. And you don't always have to learn new things every day. We're not learning anything new from the Netflix shows we're watching, friends. So it's, I think learning is always great. And I'm lazy about it, you know, pushing myself to do it. So I got to get a little takeaway from that and maybe sign myself up for a basket weaving class at, I don't know, MCTC, something like that. All right, it's 5:56. I only have about a minute left. Tomorrow we have a packed show for you. Tim Lammers is going to join us. We're going to talk about streaming. What did I start watching? Well, you know, I started watching Jack Ryan, and then someone gave us some suggestions. Oh, it was a serial killer show I want to run by Tim. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And we're going to have Blois Olson on because there is another debate tomorrow night.
And people are talking about having Amy drop out of the race.
Whoa.
Yeah, Amy and Elizabeth Warren. I'm looking at that on Twitter. They're urging them to get out to make way for Senator Sanders. Let's talk about that, if you agree or not, or what Blois thinks will happen. That's all tomorrow on CCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.